Hey everybody, this is Some Patches Required. My name is Zach Frank.
And my name is Zach Braff.
Oh god, that's not going to get confusing
at all. No,
it's not.
Not even remotely. No, my name is Aaron DeManna. I'm here again, as always.
As always. But we don't have the other DeManna brother on this episode, sadly. So no double DeManna.
Yeah, the better DeManna has... Yeah, no double DeManna, but the better DeManna has flown the coop to continue doing his good writing things, and the bargain bin DeManna that you've been listening to for the last 10 episodes has returned as the sole co-host.
You know, I feel like this is an important moment for me to say, you know, in that text chain we have with your brother, he said you did a good job, so, you know, like, is like, discount DeManna less offensive? I mean, like, let's, like, tier you up a little bit, right? Like, I feel like you're putting yourself in the F tier right now. Let's, like, get you... you know, at least, you know, D, right? I mean, if you feel too high about that, I mean, like, I don't know. I'm thinking at least, like, BC, man. Like,
well, that means a lot. I appreciate it. No, I just, I default to self-derogatory jokes. That's just kind of where my shit goes all the time.
Well, I mean, if you can't laugh at yourself, then what can you laugh at, right? That's a saying, I think.
It's something like that.
Yeah. It's related. But before we get too sucked into, you know, making fun of ourselves, the topic today, for those who are curious, you know, biting their nails in anticipation, is we're going to be talking about games. Well, apparently there's a word, abandonware. Not all of the things we'll be talking about today are abandonware, but specifically some of the things that came out from Sony previously. Regarding the various PlayStation stores and what that kind of means for some older games in general.
You mean
that...
discarding?
Yeah, discarding. Like, discarded software.
Well, but you said regarding.
No, I actually did mean regarding. Like, regarding the situation.
Well, now I'm
but
the
also
asshole.
They were discarding. Anyway, whatever I said. People can make fun of me in the comments or Twitter or whatever later. But that's roughly what we'll be talking about today. And the one thing I wanted to bring up before all of that, and Aaron, I know that you have some Last of Us stuff that we could maybe bite at a little bit here, depending
suppose.
On how quickly my thing goes. But I'm going to talk about one of my favorite developers today, which happens to be attached to EA, which I know the saying EA bad, but you know who isn't bad? I really like Respawn Entertainment. I really like Respawn. I respect Respawn a whole bunch. And, you know, aside from some, I don't play a lot of Apex. My roommate does. He's pretty excited about some of the big announcements that have just come out around Apex. But, aside from Apex having really big announcements over the course week, or the last week, Aaron, they announced a new IP, or that rather they announced that they are working on a new IP. So I'm excited to see what they end up doing with that, because I feel like typically everything Respawn does, in my opinion, is always really solid. I think Titanfall 2 is a fantastic game. I actually just bought it again on sale.
I would
sale.
Actually agree with that.
And yeah, I mean, like, the level design in it is fantastic. I think that it's a great game of, like, we know what we want to do with the level design, and we're going to make the story fit, like, the story we want to tell. I mean, there's, like, so many wacky levels in that game, but, like, they make them believable because of the universe that they're in, and they're just like, yeah, we're going to make this, like, map work where you're, like, running up houses that are, you know, completely... or their, like, plane is completely tilted. You know what I'm talking about? In, like, the factory thing.
Oh, yeah, I do. That was a buck wild. It was, like, something out of Portal, almost. Like, the shit you see going on in the background of Portal.
Yeah, no, I mean, it, like, the... the universe is just wacky. Like, if you, like, actually take this time to, like, sit down and, like, look at it, I mean, there's, like, time travel stuff, like spatial distortions, and then, like, some of the level, like, it's, I don't know. I just, Respawn constantly does really, really cool stuff. I liked, obviously, the last, the Jedi Fallen Order game that came out, so I'm excited to see what else they're working on. I did see an article, though, that said, because of this new title, there are speculations that Titanfall 3 may be not coming out at all. I think it's a little early for us to make that assumption. But that would, of course, make me sad. I love my Titan in Titanfall 2, and me very sad if Titanfall 3 no come out ever, as you can tell, because I'm using my big boy voice, of course.
And your big boy diction.
Yeah, my big boy diction, of course. And also, before we, you know, I that's really all I had to say on that. You know, there's not a whole lot about it yet. I just wanted to mention that because that is legitimately something I'm pretty excited about. But before we get into the Last of Us stuff that you mentioned to me prior to the show, I just wanted to let everyone know that we had a wonderful time trying to start this recording today. The force with which I flushed a toilet shattered a glass candle in the bathroom. So, you know, don't fuck with me, or else I will shatter every candle in your house via flushing a toilet.
You could call that a Titanfall.
Oh, I don't, it would even work if you said you would call that a Titanfall 2, because yeah, anyway, I don't need to explain that.
Oh joke. God, that's even better. Oh fuck.
Anyway,
oh,
I don't,
scatological humor.
So ashamed of myself. But anyway, I just wanted to let that be known. I'm gonna have a lot of like recordings to shift through on the Zoom end and be like, which is the one that we're using again? Because I started and stopped this thing like 50 times due to all the interruptions. Anyway, Aaron, I know that you know you'd love to talk about your favorite game ever, at least maybe briefly.
We actually, neither of us actually discussed what we were going to be doing for the introduction. So I was actually, my original thing before you brought up, Titanfall, Respawn, and, your tremendous Duke, and then enthusiastic flushing. I'm also not sure if it was a deuce, but you don't have to tell me. I'd rather not know. Let's preserve some of the mystery. I was actually going to pitch like three different and completely unrelated intros, and then I mentioned something about The Last of Us and that works. I'll just briefly say that the three that I was going to pitch that are completely unrelated were one, I started playing Manifold Garden and it's really interesting and it also has really wild level design. Two, the Oscars are tonight and I was going to ask who, what you thought would win the thing if you've seen any of them. And then, also, that dates this episode. We're recording it on the day that the Oscars are airing. Not the day that you'll be listening to this. By this point, you'll already know. So leave your predictions in the window. Not in the window, Jesus Christ. In the comment section of this podcast that doesn't have a comment section. Tweet them at someone. Obama, maybe. And then the other one was just going to be that really great video of drunk Orson Welles trying to do a champagne commercial. Because that's funny.
I don't know that, like, I can honestly comment on many of those at all if I'm being... So to appease the audience, and specifically our friend Will, who gets mad when I talk about things I don't know about, which makes sense, we should probably do The Last of Us. I feel like that's the one I can add the most
that
to.
That makes sense, yeah.
I don't even know what's up for the Oscars. That works. I'm literally, like, looking now frantically to be like, oh, God, what's up for awards? But anyway...
It's all good. This is actually the first year in a great many years that I haven't seen all of the award-nominated movies. Mm-hmm. Well, not all of them. I've never seen all of them. But I mean, like, the best picture, and generally I try and get into, like, the best, you know, director and actor and actress and supporting actress and supporting actor and all that stuff. And I've seen a lot of them, but I missed a couple. Didn't have enough time to get them done before tonight, so, we'll see. But, yeah, so I like The Last of Us a lot. And there was kind of a, and this actually weirdly ties into our overall topic in like kind of a circuitous way, mm-hmm. where I really like The Last of Us. And I also really respect the level of perfectionism that Naughty Dog strives for and sometimes achieves. Like, I don't think there's any other studio out there that makes games that look or feel like Naughty Dog games. A lot of them try. They can't quite match that level of photorealism and tension. And The Last of Us Part 2 is a story that is, I mean, obviously divisive, but also something that is so incredibly different from what we normally see in video games. And I was reading an article this morning, which is not included in our shared document, maybe yesterday morning, I don't remember, but it was about the fact that it has now garnered, The Last of Us Part 2 has now garnered over 300 Game of the Year awards, which makes it the most awarded game in history, by numbers, not by percentage of available numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
which is wild.
That is, that's a lot. I mean, kudos to, you know, the team for working on that. I mean, I'm sure, I know, like, the one thing you mentioned previously was like the mixed feeling of like, oh, this game, I mean, you enjoy the game. You know, I've watched it from like a narrative perspective. I haven't physically like played it, so sorry, Will, for that.
No, but, I mean, that's actually where I was going with that.
Sorry, I'm jumping ahead of you on this one, but to comment, I guess, like, the first thing I just want to say, you know, obviously horrible, I don't love crunch, all of that kind of stuff, but at the same time, you know, obviously don't want to belittle all of the hard work that a lot of people put into that game to make it as successful as it has been, and all of the praise that it's getting. So I'll let you, you know, drive the topic forward, but just wanted to say, you know, okay, congratulations to everyone involved. You know, your hard work made all of that possible. And Aaron, I'll let you dig into the, you know, hard work side.
No, I mean, and we'll I won't belabor the topic, but before we started recording this episode, we were rambling about a variety of things, and I said something about the fact that, like, yeah, I really like pretty much everything Naughty Dog has done. Like, all of their games are fantastic. They raise the bar in a lot of categories, and I know a lot of people didn't care for the direction that The Last of Us Part 2 took. But in my opinion, it's one of the most extremely gripping stories I've ever seen a game try and, in my opinion, succeed to tell. Because it's just so multifaceted and layered. But then I said, I kind of have to have an internal problem where I know a lot of the stuff that went on that allowed the game to come out and exist at all was really not good for the developers. So I have to sit here and say, does that devalue the experience, right? Like, it doesn't devalue the experience, but is it something that I should continue to support? And I mean, I don't, obviously that's not like a universal thing for everybody. And, you know, also not everyone liked the game, but that's not the point. Like, It's hard sometimes to reconcile the circumstances that made something that you love possible with the something that you love. And I made the joke about, like, do you wear Nike shoes? You might be able to relate. And that's, I mean, I don't, because I'm a lump. But yeah, I don't know. It was just kind of an interesting thing that I thought was like a weird internal conflict that, like, I'm super stoked that they won all those awards, and yeah, it represents an extraordinary. Wow, Scatman's back. Cut that one for editing, Aaron. It represents an extraordinary amount of work by a group of insanely talented people, and that should be celebrated. But the circumstances under which that work performed is still doesn't sit well with me. So I'm not sure how to, like, process that. But the reason that I thought, I'll just put a cap on that one, otherwise I'll go on forever, put a cap on that and say that the reason I thought that would actually kind of lead in well is because of the Sony connection. So yay, another seamless transition from me.
Well, I mean, before we fully jump into that, I think your whole point is also interesting from, like, the One conversation I had with a mutual friend of ours, who I won't mention her name, and we haven't talked about this previously, just because I haven't, you know, I don't know if she wants me to necessarily share it, but she works more on the film side than on the game side. And I had a conversation with her just catching up, and she had worked really hard on one of the new Marvel TV series that just came out. And one of my questions to her, because, you know, film is very hard on its employees, similar to games, right? And
yeah, yeah.
She was talking about, you know, putting in all these really hard hours, et cetera, et cetera. And I basically asked her, I was like, well, is it worth it? Like, is all of the suffering that you had to put in, all the long hours, all of the like general like negativity that kind of has, you know, people say, you know, fuck this at the end of it, is it all worth it? And the reason I ask that question too is because I've talked to people on the game development side. One of the things that game developers consistently tell me is, do not go into games to be famous, because what will happen is your game is famous for like a week, and then it's the next hot thing. I mean, like, the most recent example I can think of is like Fall Guys, which was popular for like a week. It was the hot thing, and then it just got like dropped like a sack of hot potatoes. And, you know, obviously some things, in the case of like The Last of Us, is, you know, to a degree still a hot topic for a couple reasons, or like Among Us has generally remained pretty relevant, or like, you know, Fortnite, etc. But most games, that's not the case. So I think it's, you know, interesting to look at that side of it too. And, you know, the answer she ultimately ended up giving me, just to finish off that story, was yes, it was very worth it, you know, in the end, reflecting, but it was still hard. And so I don't know that that's always everyone's answer to that kind of a thing. But to your point, it makes you reflect on all of the hard work that went into it, to the, you know, and in some case, it's not. Work isn't really the right way to put it. Sometimes it is abuse. I don't want it to just come off as like the hard work, dedication, create great product thing, because in a lot of these cases, it is borderline abusive.
Yeah. I think I have like two things to say to actually put a cap on this. One would be that, yeah, I mean, I've put in nothing like what some of these people who have had to deal with like super big studio crunch does to them. Mm-hmm. But I put in like really hard work into something that I was ultimately extremely proud of. You know, and yeah, I would say that all the hard work was worth it. My thought with this is that hard work can still be worth it a year from now.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't have to make people make up a year's worth of work in 2 months or 3 months.
Yeah.
I don't know how long. I didn't really do the ratio. I'm just saying, like, the work is ultimately rewarding. And yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people work a lot of really long hours at really hard jobs that they don't find worth it at the end of the day. They're just doing it to survive. So, I mean, and frankly, so are game developers, but it's a little bit of a different situation. But, you know, I feel like it's incumbent upon the employer to make sure that you're not victimizing your people by making them, you know, really like sit and scratch their heads at the end of the day and say, well, was it worth it? Because you know, you have enough money to push it back. You don't have to have them stay there that long. You don't. And then the other thing is, I also think that that brings up another conversation, which we will not be having at length, but it's that entire idea of separating the art from the artist.
Mm-hmm.
When like a really problematic artist made something that you really love, and then the problematic artist is revealed to be extremely problematic, and then you go back to that thing that you love and you kind of have a sour taste in your mouth, and you're like, I don't know how I feel about this anymore, actually.
I mean,
had that with some Kevin Spacey movies.
Yeah, no, that yeah, exactly. Whereas, like,
I mean, like, that kind of, or like Michael Jackson, or fucking even Armie Hammer right now, because I love Call Me By Your Name.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a wonderful little movie, but Armie Hammer might be kind of extremely scary, actually, and it's hard to go back, so I don't know. It's not something we need to dive into, but it's kind of related, like, separating the art from the people who made the art, and mm-hmm. just appreciating the art on its own terms.
Yeah.
And people have differing opinions on that, and, you know, it's just an interesting thing.
Yeah, no, I think the only thing I'll echo, and I agree to a degree with the artist thing, separating work from the artist. But like you said, we won't dive into that, at least not on this episode. But
I'm actually not even sure where I stand on that entirely. But
well, maybe one episode we'll figure it out. But to echo the one point, you know, I think it is important to realize that all of these products probably could have been developed if they would have just given more time as well. Like it's not like they had to crunch. I mean, okay, let me recontextualize that. There are business incentives and there are market incentives that said, yes, we need to crunch to meet these deadlines. But in reality, if those pressures weren't on them, I don't, like, there's no reason that the game couldn't have taken an extra year or two to be developed and be just as successful. You know, a lot of project management research shows, like, crunch is not effective. There's a lot of waste. If you're in project management, you should hate waste. That's a whole other conversation. So just wanted to echo that point that you made, Aaron. Like,
no, I
there's no reason to suspect yeah. It would suddenly fail if they would have taken extra time to produce the game, as opposed to, you know, rushing it.
I was going to say, yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I was going to say in another one of my flawless transitions, that actually kind of relates to our topic in a little bit, in the sense that corporations apparently just don't care about anything but money. I watched the Jimquisition video that you sent.
Yeah.
And man, they did bring up some interesting points in there. I don't agree with everything, but there are some interesting points
yeah.
that kind of relate to that idea of like valuing profits over anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so for those that don't know, Jim Sterling, I absolutely love them. Jim Sterling is amazing. I love a lot of their work. But to your point, I don't know that I always agree with everything that Jim says, because Jim is like very staunchly like socialist, and like I'm definitely leaning that direction. I, you know, in a lot of ways, I'd be like, yeah, sure, why not? I'm socialist. But like they're very much so. So like there's some things that like Jim will demonize like a ton, and I don't find it as offensive. But anyway, you know, I think to your point, we'll transition into the topic. And what we're referencing is an episode that kind of, at least for me, inspired wanting to talk about this. But there's an episode on Jim Sterling's YouTube channel called Why It's Morally Okay to Pirate All of Sony's Games, the Jimquisition. And we're not going to be touching on like the piracy side of it too much today, but what I did want to focus on, or what we did want to focus on, was some of Sony's recent announcements. And some of this has changed, and we realized that they backtracked on some of this, but even the fact that it could come up is worth discussing, in my opinion. Yeah, so,
and I think that serves as kind of a, and I actually think the piracy factor plays into it, just not from the like piracy angle.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the main problem with what Sony did and the larger issue that represents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, sorry.
No, what I was going to say is just the main statement that kind of kicked all of this off was Jim Ryan over at Sony. For those that don't know, Jim Ryan is the head of sales and marketing.
God.
And Jim, actually, prior to a lot of these store announcements, and I think I texted you about this when it happened, Aaron, but Jim had gone to some event, and this is kind of what kicked off a lot of the quote unquote controversy around it, is that he attended a Gran Turismo event. And, you know, he had a couple things to say, kind of in reference to this. And the whole quote is, when we've dabbled with backwards compatibility, I can say it is one of those features that is much requested, but not actually used much. That, and I was at a Gran Turismo, event recently where they had PS1, PS2, PS3, and PS4 games. And the PS1 and PS2 games, they looked ancient. Why would anybody want to play these? And so I've got a couple comments in there. So the first one, with backwards compatibility, I think I understand that from a business perspective. Like, if you're investing a lot of money towards keeping something that people aren't really using, like, I get it, the business demand to wanting to cut that. But at the same time, you know, just listening to his comments about the PS1 and the PS2 games looking bad and being like, well, these games are ugly, why would anyone want to play that? I just feel like it's interesting because it shows such a disconnect from Jim Ryan being this like sales guy, like the sales executive, and like the actual consumers that he's servicing. Like, I play ugly games all the time. Hell, like Valheim is fantastic. I love Valheim, but that game doesn't look like, you know, Call of Duty Warfare. Like, you don't need good graphics for it to be a good game. Like, the looks is not why we play the games necessarily, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you. I also think just like the that, I mean, aside from all of the other many, many reasons I disagree with that statement, some of which you just brought up, it's also just like a factually inaccurate thing, because ugly is entirely in perception. It's not.
Well, I guess to be universal. Fair, like, I was implying that's what he meant. He said ancient, so, you know, like, I don't want to.
No, I was agreeing with you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, I in the drawer directly to my right, I have a copy of Pokemon Fire Red that I'm playing on my old as fuck Game Boy Advance SP.
Yeah.
Is that game beautiful? By what standard? What's your yardstick? Mm-hmm. Who cares? I have a collection of retro video game consoles that I have accumulated either through my various shenanigans or were gifted to me by my brother. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I can tell you without a doubt that Shaq Fu is not a great looking game. I still played it and I'd go back and play it again, because that's not what a game is. A game isn't entirely about its visuals. And let's extend that to modern games. Where does that leave stylistic interpretation?
Well, I would like to even move. So that's like the most obvious point, right? Is like, it's just very clear that like this initial statement by Jim was kind of ignorant when it came to like why players play games. It's not all about the graphics. Like, certainly that is some people, but like, let's even just talk about gameplay, right?
It's a factor.
Well, I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a factor.
Okay, I need to cut for one hot second in and go on the record as having said, I believe on this show, that all of Bethesda's games look 5 years older than they are. And that has actually bugged me before. Because they have the resources make the games look better, and it doesn't seem to be a stylistic decision. I just wanted to get that out of the way, and now proceed to gameplay.
Well, I mean, I definitely don't disagree with parts of that statement, but it kind of depends on the studio, because like Prey looks good and there's like other games from like the publisher. Anyway,
but Prey was Arcane. And yeah, it was more stylized. It was like Dishonored. Dishonored was stylized.
Mm-hmm.
So was Bioshock Infinite. They weren't meant to be photorealistic. I mean, the lighting in Bioshock Infinite is fucking incredible.
Yeah, but those
they weren't
games,
trying
like,
to make the faces look like.
Those games look good, though, is what I'm saying still. Like, I would still say, like, even with the stylized, like, it's not like stylized like Valheim, where it's like Valheim stylized, but it looks old and kind of retro-y, is what I'm saying.
There's also nothing wrong with that. It's using the coolest thing about artistic mediums is that they're completely malleable.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm going off on a tangent here, and I'll let you get back to mechanics in like 8 seconds. It'll be more than 8 seconds. But if you look at a book, think about a book. Oh man, this is going to make me sound like the bougiest person on the planet. Think about a book like Infinite Jest, which is comfortably 1,200 pages. But a great many of those pages are actually annotations in what is essentially like an encyclopedia in the background,
mm-hmm.
at the back of the book. So you have to flip to the back of the book to take a look at the annotation to understand the in-world context of the sentence you just read.
Mm-hmm.
That is extremely interesting, and it points to the malleability of the medium of writing. You can write whatever you want, how you write it, however you want to write it. It's very interesting. Film. No two movies look exactly alike. A lot of people do really interesting structures. Pulp Fiction is the first one that came to mind for some reason.
Mm.
It does like this weird circuitous, completely detached, out of order segment timeline system where things that happen at the beginning of the movie are actually the things that happen at the end of the movie. The same is true for music. The same is true for video games. Fuck, even The Last of Us 2 does that. Why limit, and visuals are a huge part of that, like pixel art. is pixel art as immediately gorgeous to the mind of a marketing executive as something like God of War? No, probably not. But what does that mean? That means nothing. It's not like it was done with purpose. It wasn't done out of incompetence. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. No. I mean, I agree with all that. Also, on the note of pixel art, like, Twitter has so many freaking talented pixel artists. It's insane how good pixel artists are incredible. Yeah. No, shout out to pixel artists. It's freaking ridiculous. I'm always dumbfounded whenever I look through Twitter, just for art in general. But what I was going to say before that too is, you know, even because I feel like if it was simply a note of like, well, it's not it, you know, there's more to it than just the art. Like, I feel like that even discredits some of the older games too, because it's like, sometimes, yes, older games don't have the best gameplay systems in place, but like, there's a lot of old genres that don't necessarily exist anymore. I mean, the one that I actually have it on this list to talk about later, but the one that I love is, black and white, which is the genre is called like God game is the way it's generally referred to, but like, there's nothing that really fills that spot anymore. So the only way to play that genre of game is to go back to old games. Like, old games inherently have value. Didn't what? Oh yeah. Peter Molyneux is the guy that made the genre. So like, other than him being a meme, he made the black and white games, and like, I was around, but I wasn't actively paying attention to him about black and white. I know all the promises he made about Fable and all the, you know, over promising that he did. I didn't see what he did for black and white, but I loved black and white. I loved all of those games, growing up and still do. But, like, I have to go to old games in order to play that genre because it doesn't exist anymore. No one's chosen to really pick that up and push it forward as much as some of the other games. So, like, I feel like even old systems, even if they're a little bit archaic, like Rainbow Six Vegas 2 and 1 have really wacky controls, those games are still valued and loved even with the weird, goofy controls that they have. And the, like, you know, subpar graphics compared to modern day stuff. So, well,
I also just think that's an unfair. Sorry.
No, I mean, I was done. That was my rant gameplay.
I think if a game or a game developer, especially if you look at like a game developer who has held on to a property for so long, continues to make that property into a series without there's always outside influence, but without like a different studio taking it over. So like Assassin's Creed, you can't even barely compare one to the other because it's 11 different studios.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but yeah, mechanically Assassin's Creed 1 is, it's very promising, but if you released it today, it wouldn't fly because it's really rough. But I also think that's because, you know, even up into the, I mean, even now, we've talked about this before, game design is completely about iteration. Everything about it is about iteration. Mm-hmm. It's not even remotely solid. There's no one metric for what is good. You know, it's not like, well, they made The Godfather and now every movie should be The Godfather. Well, they made Tetris and that worked, and they made Mario for the arcade, and now that's good. You have to iterate, you have to do variants, and that's not a sentence that anyone should have ever said, because it makes no sense, but you have to, like, allow yourself the ability to, like, flex your creative muscles and change and experiment and learn. And going back, a lot of those games were still part of learning, and they still are. It just feels deeply, like, unfair to me to, like, judge a game because it was part of the learning process, because that's what every game is part of the learning process.
Exactly.
And it's a product of the learning process.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think my ending note, since there's more to the story, but I, you know, my ending note is you just triggered a thought in my head, which was, you mentioned books, right? So like, Machiavelli's whole work of, oh my gosh, why am I forgetting the actual name? Is it The Prince? I can't remember right now, which is really embarrassing considering, like, I love the book growing up, even though it's very Machiavellian. But like,
well, I feel better about my David Foster Wallace reference now.
Well, but what I'm getting at is Machiavelli's work, in addition to some other writers, was some of the very first political science literature and writing. So almost discrediting old games is similar to like discrediting old works of writing. I mean, you can even look at like Shakespeare. Like, yes, Shakespeare was great, but Shakespeare. Like, you know, current, the best playwright in current day is probably better than Shakespeare because he's got more things to pull from. He's got more experiences to pull from. And he learned from his contemporaries. It's the same thing with video games. But just because modern day writers may be better than historic writers, not all of them, obviously, but some, that doesn't mean that those old works shouldn't be respected and treated like they should be treated like they matter and like they have value because they helped build up to where we're at now. I think that's like my...
I also think that... I think that much like I was saying that attractiveness to the eye is on a sliding scale, so is the concept of better. Because I know a lot of people who will tell you that Mario peaked at like Mario 3. Like Mario 3 is the best game that Mario ever did, or they never made a better... You'll probably find fewer people since Breath of the Wild, but a lot of people held out that Ocarina of Time or A Link to the Past is one that I hear a lot. Better is completely subjective. And it's not just one kind of person that plays games. So, you know, maybe a Jim Ryan is the kind of person who only wants to play the shiniest, newest... Well, he probably doesn't play games, but who only wants to support the shiniest, newest games.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who think... you know, like loyalists that they go all the way back. So like, you know, the greatest modern playwright right now, I don't know who that would be. I mean, like is Lin-Manuel Miranda, this is a terrible comparison and I'm going to get, if we had enough people who care about me saying dumb shit, I would get lambasted for this, but Lin-Manuel Miranda and Tennessee Williams are nothing alike and they appeal to completely different audiences. So who's better, you know, is A Streetcar Named Desire better than Hamilton? Why would you try and compare those two things? They're appealing in their own ways. There's a market for both of them.
Yeah.
And it's in different times. You can have your opinion on it, but it's not objective and it's not universal. Is there probably more technique behind it now? Yeah, probably. Have we been able to like shed a lot of have we been able to shed a lot of like old shitty stereotypes? Well, some of them. Not quite enough, but some of them. So is our work a little bit more inclusive now? Yeah, a little bit. That's better. I would call that objectively better. But, you know, in terms of technique, fucking Shakespeare created like 300 words or some shit like that we use every day. that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying like going through all this stuff, it's just wild to think that, devaluing. I can't see why anyone want to devalue. I mean, there are bad games, but it's all in perspective. Anyway, moving on.
I mean, so where this is all going is honestly, because, you know, spoiler alert to Forward, but we'll end up talking about you know, the preservation of old games is where this is going to end up going. As much as, you know, I as an Xbox fanboy, I'm partially joking about that, would love to dig in on Sony and yell at them for dumb things that their executives do. But moving on from the initial point, so Jim Ryan has that whole quote, right? And there has been an update to this story, but I'm gonna say it in chronological order, just so we get through it. But
do it.
Basically, initially, Sony had said that they were going to be shutting down support for the PlayStation Store across three platforms, which were the PS3, the PlayStation Portable, and the PS Vita.
All three of which I own.
All three of which Aaron owns as an avid fan, an avid fan of PlayStation. And, you know, this was a huge issue because, one, it's funny, in the Jim Sterling video, Aaron, so you probably heard this, the PS Vita isn't even 10 years old. Games are actually now being developed for it. Sony also didn't necessarily tell all of their partners working on PS Vita games that they were going to close the store. So some developers didn't even learn that the store was closing until the general public did. And so there was just a whole bunch of outrage. And you had articles talking about the amount of games that were going to be lost to time because they were digital only exclusives for the PlayStation Store. And so, you know, just to throw out some numbers, and these have changed now because of updates, but to throw out some numbers, Aaron.
Yes.
There were, oh man, where did I put it?
It's 2,000, I know that.
Well, so that number was a little, that was basically how many games wouldn't be able to be downloaded online. That wasn't like exclusives lost forever. I think it was 120 exclusives lost forever. But in terms of just games, like not being able to get downloaded anymore, digitally, there were like 630 for Vita, 730 for PS3, 293 for PS2 classics, 293 PS2 classics and 260 PS1 classics. And, basically the way this report broke it down is there was only 120 exclusives lost because there were 120 digital exclusives that could only be purchased on the PlayStation Store. The other games could be purchased on like PC or Xbox.
That makes sense. Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I saw another one that listed, I think, 138. They may not have...
The update...
That may not have factored in the other things.
Yeah, well, now the update, to make sure we just get that out of the way, is that Sony has backtracked and they are not turning away support for the PS3 and the PS Vita. So now it's only like 35 digital-only games that are going to disappear forever. But like... obviously, Sony went back on their decision. They listened to the community, whatever. That's great. But it still brings up the question of, like, how scary it is that you could just lose 120 games in the course of, a couple months. Just gone. Forever. Like, the hard work of tons of studios. 120 games, that's a lot. I mean, like, is it 2,000 digital-only games? No. But it's 120. I mean, heck, we're still losing 35 digital-only games that people put a ton of effort into that are on the PSP, and people won't be able to get that anymore. And so, you know, that goes to the game preservation thing, yeah. Aaron, that we were going to talk about.
Which, I mean, yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
That's me passing the baton on to you, because I just rambled for, like, 6 minutes.
You are fine. It was good. It was good, productive rambling. I
was pushing the narrative forward.
Well, we needed to. I got on my soapbox for a while. I also think I just said soapbox, which is...
soapbox are my favorite sports team.
But do make sure to wash your bags. Oh, that was a better joke than mine. Dang it. Okay. Well, what I was going to say was, when I actually first heard about this, I did what most people do and just like saw the headline, Sony's going to shut these things down. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, that happens. People like software companies pull support for platforms, you know, after they're in quotations obsolete all the time. I've had it done with like old phones, you know, Flash is dead now, and, you know, just a bunch of different stuff like that. And then once I actually started reading it, I was like, oh shit, this is actually really, really fucking bad. And again, like you said, to their credit, I will actually give them credit. Probably, I mean, I don't know how much is due, but possibly, I don't know, they corrected the mistake and said, we're not going to do that. But it reminded me that preserving art is important. I mean, that's some people's actual... literal paid to do for a living jobs is art preservationists. Mm-hmm. But it's for, you know, canvas. It's not for digital. And, you know, I would also say that, like, I've played a fair number of like last episode we talked about shovelware.
Yeah.
A little bit, and some just like really garbage games. But the fact of the matter is those shouldn't be erased from history just because you don't want to, you know, keep a server alive. If that server is, like, moonlighting as a dolphin murderer or something, then, yeah, probably shut down the server. I'll give up being able to play fucking... I was trying to think of a bad name of a game, but the only one that came to mind was Hannah Montana the Movie, the game, which I know has a physical release, so I can't... can't use that one. But, you know, if there was a compelling reason to shut down those servers in their entirety, I would understand that. But even so, you should preserve copies of the games because they're art. This is it's like why we're all still talking about the fact that the Library of Alexandria burned down. Because all of those documents were just lost forever. And, you know,
well,
it doesn't matter if it's a piece of crap. It.
No, exactly. I mean, I was about to say, forever. Like,
we can get to that part.
Well, so what I was going to say is this does kind of go on the God. This is an entire whole episode is video games art. I'm working under the assumption that it is for the conversation today. So like just clarifying that. But I think even if you don't think it's art, you should still want to preserve these things because they're meaningful to a ton of people. And so kind of to what I was saying earlier, Aaron, as much as I would love to dig into PlayStation and say, haha, look how dumb that was decision was. Xbox would never do something like that. That's not the important takeaway from this. The important takeaway from this, in my opinion, is
no, it's not.
Games need to be preserved, whether that be Microsoft games or Sony games, they need to be preserved. And we should have a route for them to be preserved. Now, I don't think we can expect capitalism and corporations to do that for us. I think that they're always going to be motivated by money, and they're never going to just keep these servers up to host these games or the services with which you can then buy the games. But I think that they should be willing to say, here is the source code for these games that you love.
Yeah.
Here, have it. If you want to run it on your hardware, we don't care. Right? I think that is more than fair. In my opinion, because it's not like they're making money on it anyway, right?
I agree.
Like they're not making money. Even with like the old copies of games, like you mentioned Hannah Montana, the movie, the game, like if there's a physical copy of that and someone sells it to you, you know, whoever made that's not making the money.
Oh yeah, totally. I'm completely, well, first off, I'm disappointed in myself for mentioning Hannah Montana, the movie, the game.
What a mouthful.
Twice, two episodes in a row. It actually doesn't have the game appended to the title. I just like to add it because it's funny. But what I was going to say was, like, even if it's not the source code, have a database. Have a database for old games. People can download them. You can even, you know what? I would even be fine with you including all the fucking DRM protection that you want on it. But if you're not making money off of it anymore, why should you blitz it from the face of the earth rather than allowing people to either re-experience something that was valuable to them years ago or experience it for the first time now? Because the experiences are still valuable. Mm-hmm. Even completely terrible games, they shouldn't be completely blitzkrieged from the face of the earth just because you're like, it's too much work. No one wants to buy this. And also, I would also like to say, I should have said this before that, but I didn't, and my brain got ahead of my mouth. Actually, my mouth got ahead of my brain, much like it did right there. I don't want us to come off as sounding like all the people who work at any of these companies, even in like corporate level leadership positions, are completely apathetic towards like the artistic value of games. I'm sure there are some. I can't name any of them. But I'm sure there are some, but I'm completely with you. Like, if you're not making money off of it, like a used copy of, what's a crap game that I played when I was a kid? It doesn't matter. A used copy of, I can't remember what it's actually called. It might be called Airport, but it was an old ass PC game that I used to play when I was a kid. And the only reason I don't know what it was actually called is because the only game that I ever played on it, because it had a bunch of different mini games. The one that I played the most was Suitcases, where you just had to sort a bunch of suitcases. It's probably not nearly as fun as I remember, but if I buy a used copy of that, I actually have a used copy of that. If I have a copy of that I got on eBay, whatever the hell developer bought, like built that game, isn't seeing anything for it. So why, just because of the fact that it's a digital property, you know, should we be destroying all of this work and all of these experiences? It's akin to burning books just because you don't want people to have them and it would be inconvenient for you to keep them. How about donate them to a library?
I understand your metaphor on the burning books. I don't know if I would have said that one because connotation behind it. But
yeah, the connotation's rough.
No. But no, to your point, it is like if there's a book that's no longer being the to your point, what you're saying is like if there's a book that's no longer being actively published, there's nothing wrong with the book. Where, you know, the context that we know it doesn't matter. But like there's nothing wrong with the book. It's just been it stopped being published. It's like a lie, or it's like the company just burning all copies of it because they I mean, suddenly
that's
just stopped making
more what
it.
I meant.
Yeah, no. I know what you meant, I was just clear.
Thank you. Where I'm going with that is actually like there's this schism between physical and digital media. So I know a lot of people who like to read but hate buying actual books. They're like very much into like ebooks, not even audiobooks, but ebooks. My dad is actually one of them. He loves ebooks because they take up so much less space. I'm still a little bit of a loyalist in that regard, where I want to have the book. So I'll go to the, well, I won't go to the store right now because it's not safe. But when the stores are open, or if I'm buying a book, I'll buy the actual paper book. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that is then there's space. So my point being, rather than to use something that's slightly less problematic as an example, recycling the book via the recycling bin, you can recycle it by donating it to a library or giving it to a used bookstore, you know, making that story available to someone else who isn't you, because you don't, I don't need it anymore. Why don't you take it? Why would I destroy it if someone else can enjoy it? I'm a poet and I didn't even realize it.
Exactly. No, I mean, I think it's a good point. And like another thing that I mentioned when we initially were talking about this idea, you mentioned DRM. So I'm just going to talk about always online games, especially since Outriders just came out. I think that's what it is, which is an always online game. So like the scary thing about that, right, is like since we're all moving towards generally purchasing more games digital only, that's not always the case. I used to not be that way. I will admit, though, recently, it's just so much more convenient. The scary thing about that is you don't own that game. A lot of the platforms are very specific and they say you do not actually own this game. If we decide to just kick this off of our services, like, bye, there's your money. All the time you spend on that, hope you had fun. You're not going to touch it again. Like, not all platforms like that, but the vast majority are. And so the scary thing is, like, if a company suddenly decides, let's just use Outriders. If Outriders, you know, 5 years down the line, let's say it's still you know, got a moderately okay following, but not enough of a one that like the developer wants to keep supporting the servers. They can just nix it. And then I'd imagine if the servers aren't there, I don't know all the like technical end of it, but I'd imagine if there's not a server there to like make sure that you're playing online, you just can't play the game. And the reason that that game is such a good example is it can be a single player game. It has no reason that it needs to be always online. It's just because they want to make sure people aren't pirating it. But the shitty thing about that is if you own a physical copy of that game, because it is always online, with my limited understanding of how this works, so keep in mind, I might be wrong, but with my understanding, you couldn't get on because there's no servers to authenticate and let you play the game. So like those two things in there, you know, not having ownership of the games that you own is already a scary issue. Without, you know, the fact that there's no site where you can download abandonware. Well, I think there are a few, but like they don't have everything. And, then, as I mentioned, these always online games, like what if the developers want to stop supporting them? Like that's just, it's kind of shitty. I mean, like Destiny, right? Like, even though that's an MMO, you could still, in theory, play that as a single-player game. What happens when there's no longer servers?
It's gone. It's done.
Well,
Can you play it without internet?
Okay. I just wanted to make sure before I made a really dumb statement.
Because it's a shared world shooter. I mean, I could be wrong, and please lambast me on Twitter, at Aaron Rancelot. Hit me up. Don't point this at Zach. Please don't hurt me with words. I'm pretty sure you can't play it on without an internet connection, because the overworld is shared. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a non-networked version of it. I also think like a lot of that, I mean, and I've seen games disappear like that before, in the past, which it brings me to a slightly tangenty topic that I think is still related, which is the game's preservation angle is not a new issue, but it is a different issue than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
By which I mean, if you talk to people who are really into like retro games or retro game consoles, or hell, if you were ever someone who had a Pokemon game from the Game Boy Advance generation, because of the way that those cartridges were constructed, eventually certain parts of them just stop working. the thing that always comes to mind is, I think it was my copy of Pokemon Emerald, that no longer has an in-game clock because that component in the cartridge just kaput, done, gone.
Great.
I have a copy of the Game Boy Color version. I'm not even that big of a Pokemon fan. I just have a lot of old Pokemon games for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Pokemon Silver? The saving component is gone. Like, it has no more memory. It won't even let you save the game. Which is a problem that a lot of early NES games had, because they just didn't include that function. But I'm pretty sure that's right. But like, that's going away. So there are a lot of people saying like, a lot of these old retro games, these old like extremely influential and extremely important games, are going to be unplayable eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not doing anything to preserve them. The way that it's different now is that the format is so much different, because the internet is just there.
Mm.
And like you're saying, with online only games, there's no way to preserve that experience, because there's no way to do that. Hey, Scatman.
I'm the Scatman!
When the server shuts down, it's gone. It's in the mist, as far as we're concerned. I mean, the source code still exists, but, you know, it's just gone. So I don't know. There's a lot to talk about there. Again, that's a whole other topic. Well, it's a related topic, but it's a whole episode.
Well, I mean, I know that we're going to be winding down here, looking at our collective time. But you know, I think what you're referencing, right, is I almost said modulator, but that's not at all what you're talking about. You're talking about help me out here. I forgot the word, but being emulators. Able to play emulate. Thank you. Emulators, right? Like that's part of the conversation around that, is that the emulators are a way to experience this old content, and it may be a little awkward on some of them because you're not playing it on the intended device necessarily, but it still preserves that thing to some degree.
Yeah, and it's actually brings us kind of back to the original Jim Sterling thing that you used to introduce this particular topic, where there's a weird kind of morality divide between that surrounds emulators. A divide can't surround something by its definition, but that's not important. So there are people who believe that emulation is purely piracy. Like, you are taking something that you did not buy and playing it on a platform that you did buy but was not developed by the person that you bought it from. And, or is not on the same platform or whatever the hell. But there are other people who don't have a problem with emulation as long as you also purchased a copy of the game. So if you purchase a copy of the game, it gives you like a I'm a good person pass to download Pokemon Colosseum to your MacBook.
Mm.
As long as you already have a copy of Pokemon Colosseum. So there's this weird thing around that. And there was actually a lot of talk, because I think it's back up now. I think I mentioned in a previous episode that MU Paradise, which is one of the biggest ones, got shut down. I think I also then corrected myself because I found out later that it hadn't been shut down. But I haven't checked recently. But the point being that MU Paradise, when that got taken down, it was a huge topic in the community, because people were saying like, a lot of these games were on MU Paradise because they were being preserved. There's no other way to play. I can't come up with one off the top of my head. The only one that I can come up with, again, is VIP with Pamela Anderson. which I actually do have for the Dreamcast. So
But I mean, you can even look at like Pokemon Silver, Pokemon Gold, and yes, there are newer versions of that. But like the originals, you can't get unless you're buying. Okay, so this is the frustrating thing to your point, and I'll be very like teethy about it and aggressive, which is a company is not going to make money if you purchase an old version of Pokemon Gold or Pokemon Silver. Nintendo is not going to see any of that profit. That profit 100% goes to the person that owns that original game. Nintendo doesn't lose money from emulators at all of their older titles. Right. There is literally no threat to their modern games from those as well. And this is the thing that Jim Sterling really hits on, and I think it's a potentially a good note. I don't want to cut off any other ideas you want to add on at the end, but I think it's a potentially good note to end on. And I'm not going to say pirate things because in a lot of ways that is unethical, but it's been proven that piracy is a service level issue. And even aside from that, if the company's never going to make money seeing the game ever, and they've just abandoned the game and have no plans of redistributing it in any form, like, why is that illegal? Because the problem with piracy is that you are taking money away from the company that is behind the game. Nintendo is not, I'm just using Nintendo as an example. Nintendo is not losing sales or money because of these emulators existing on these for these old games that people want to experience. I would argue, if anything, they are gaining fans and gaining more money from the existence of those platforms.
Yeah. I agree. I would say, like, for me, the line of demarcation between like when it's wrong and when it's right, unfortunately, does come down to the money factor, because I don't always agree with it, but I can understand why people would be upset if I can't remember what the actual name of the emulator is called, but someone managed to pull a ROM of Breath of the Wild to make it run really well on PC. Mm-hmm. That game still sells. That game can still make Nintendo money. I can understand why they'd be pissed off about that. Pokemon Silver? No, it's not included in any of your retro packages. So it's not like because they do repackage these games fairly frequently, which again, I can see from a business perspective why, like, if you wanted to repackage it as something else later within like three great Pokemon games from a million years ago, we'll use our own emulation software and put it on the Switch. That's what all of the SNES games are on the Switch. It's also what all the SNES games are on the SNES Mini and NES Mini. But, you know, if they're not losing money and it's not taking from a current profit stream, then it just seems short-sighted and greedy. And I would agree that, like, being able to go back and play those games makes me more likely to want to go and buy the next one. But then again, I'm not a corporation, so
you're not? Damn. I had no idea.
Ah, sorry. This whole time I thought it's actually the only reason, it's the only reason you asked me to be on the show.
Yep. For that corpo vibe, right? That one episode, Kentucky Cyberpunk. Fried Cyberpunk. Check it out, guys. Just
it's the lowest performing episode.
Yeah, definitely.
Please listen to it.
I think like looking at the time here and then like the amount of other content I would have, I don't know that I have anything like incredibly important to add to the conversation except just, you know, reiterating. I think it is important to understand there is value. There is inherent value in old games, and preserving them is important and should be something that people talk about, and developing a platform that enables them to do that. That's kind of my end thing.
I would completely agree with that. My end thing would be careful with piracy, because I think there are instances where it's wrong, or at the very least problematic. But yeah, I really think that the solution to the issue would be for each of these companies that has these types of games that might go off or whatever to devote some resources to. It doesn't even have to be one database, but a series of databases that preserve these games and offer them up to you for free. Sony even has a thing right now. It's like a play at home thing to encourage people to stay home during COVID. Mm-hmm. And they're giving away like big ass games for free. You don't have to pay a goddamn thing for it. They're just giving them to you so that you don't go outside and die. Why can't they do that with old games? I don't understand what the differentiation there is.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that they'd be losing less money by doing it the other way. So yeah, that would be the solution in my opinion. It's not going to happen, but yeah, be careful with piracy so you don't, you know, the FBI doesn't kill you. They
yeah,
won't.
That's
I'm
what
just being hyperbolic.
You downloaded a copy of Bubble Bobble 4.
Oh God, not Bubble
Bobble.
Going
to the pokey.
The pokey. Man, I'm just pulling weird shit out right now. No, but yeah, other than that, I think there's a lot of value in it, and I think that the failure here is on the side of people who don't treat video games as art, because other art is given a lot more attention in terms of preservation. There's a whole other conversation to be had about film, though, especially in the age of streaming, but we won't get into that. Video games should be treated as art worth preserving. That's how I will end my side of that.
Sweet. Well, then catch us for our next episode, where inevitably we talk about why you don't want the tall lady from Resident Evil Village to crush your face with her thighs. That will be a conversation led by none other than Aaron, who is out of touch, according to those who shamed Kotaku. And no, on a serious note, yep. I want to thank not only Dan from the Godzilla Novelization Project for hopping on our episode last week, but also E. Dougie Art, who helped us with our wonderful logo and can be found on Etsy as well as on Instagram under the same name. So check out the show notes for those details.
Yeah, and as always, a huge shout out to Beach Girl. They wrote our music. And I know a lot of times in podcasts, people just kind of like do this thing as a trite, like, oh, it's a great song. It does pump me up right beforehand. But every time I'm sitting down to edit one of these things, my favorite part is putting in the music because it's just so damn good. it really is. It really is a great tune.
It slaps.
And they did a phenomenal job on it. And the rest of their songs are outstanding as well. So please check them out on Spotify and other places where fine music can be found.
Yep. And I think that's it for us, folks, at least for today.
Badia, 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 badia. That's all, folks.
Exactly. All right. Bye, everybody.
Fare thee well. Oh, God.